Okay, yeah, so this was just the sort of half an hour that we were going to put on the end of Alberto's talk on Tuesday, but there was way too much cool science. But that's good, because everyone's interested in the science, right? But as we were going through, I think we're looking at the slides and going, is that right? It would be great to see that, especially if the paper's not out yet and you can't check it. So the question that I wanted to sort of look at for maybe, or long haul, particularly get excited about getting into LISA, is what do you want to do if you want to get involved in actually looking at some of the LISA data and want to try and figure out some of these questions that have been asked, or you have someone, if you're interested in these kind of questions, right, what do you need to do to be able to answer them? And part of the motivation maybe here is we do have an existing community of people who've done a lot of analysis from the ground-based side. It's not been too challenging to transfer this expertise from things like LIGO to third-generation detectors like Cosmic Explorer or ET. They're kind of just bigger versions of LIGO with a few extra complications on the top. LISA's quite different in a few ways. So it's a little bit more of a challenge to get to sort of transfer knowledge from LIGO directly into LISA. So the question is, where can people meet in the middle? I think there probably is some more effort needed on the LISA side to help with this, but given that there aren't that many people in the LISA consortium working on this at all, there probably needs to be some more people thinking about these kind of things if we really want to understand what LISA is going to be capable of with clear, sort of nicely written out papers like we've had coming into second and third generation detectors, really exploring what we're going to be able to do. So I just wanted to sort of walk through some of the resources that are there and just kind of show some of the things that are available. If people have any questions, let us know. This is mostly going to be a case of just going, here's web pages that you can look at and see stuff. I want you to come away with sort of, here's where you would need to look at if you want to get involved in these kind of things and try to answer these kind of questions. And just give a sense of what sort of things are out there and maybe what gaps there are. So I'll use the Slack channel because this is the 21st century and we don't, Blackboard's old school. So here is the sort of, this page is public, not everything that we'll get to will be. But here's the LISA Consortium sort of homepage. This is a collection of useful links that I wasn't aware of until Monday, which is not a great thing, actually. thank you for showing me this. I knew of some of the links, I just haven't found this sort of page showing where it was all collected together. So there's sort of some key information about what is LISA, right? What is the LISA Consortium? What's the mission? One of the cute documents that's linked from here, for example, is the LISA Science Case, so you can read through and understand sort of what it's about, and that's a really cool image. You can see, say, some of the sort of plots that we saw before. Here's one of the ones that Alberto was showing. So if you want to sort of read through and really understand a bit more about where LISA's coming from, what type of things it might be involved in, here's some sort of links to get involved. It also goes through some of the sort of internal committees, publication and presentations for people who've been... Richard's not here. People who've had a lot of fun with this in LIGO. There's going to be one in LISA as well. But also LISA sort of aiming to be open, diverse, inclusive, and there's the sort of sense of always the acronyms because there's always a bunch of stuff that is unclear. And most importantly, the sign-up. A lot of what I'll show is not public. It is sort of restricted to LISA Consortium members. The LISA Consortium comes with two tiers of membership, one where you're a full member, where you actually have to do something. And sign up to do something. And one where you just don't want to commit to anything, but you want access to the information. So for most people, I think in Portsmouth we've got maybe 12 people who are actually part of the consortium. I'm the only one who's a full member. Most people, I think the sort of associate membership is probably the right thing, where you can see what's going on, you can access the various things, and you don't actually have to do anything in return for being sort of part of this. And it also is good for the community then to have sort of people involved in this, then people know that this is sort of something that you're interested in. And there's also some sort of tools that you can look into and see various Gits and mailing lists and all the normal stuff that comes with a large collaboration. So they're sort of the go-to if you just want to start getting involved in leases. So maybe the next question then is, okay, I've understood LIGO problems. I sort of understand how LIGO data analysis works. Why is LISA different to LIGO, and why can I not just apply things directly? And having said stuff about the blackboard, I'll use the blackboard. The basic idea with LIGO is it's nice, right? You have, or similar, you have two arms, and at a very simple level, you shine a laser up one arm, you shine it down the other arm. The arms are the same length, so the light that comes back is the same. You get some phase shift if there's a very slight distance change, and that's what you measure at the photodiode. And of course, it gets way more complicated than that. With LISA, this picture changes quite a bit, even if I ignore the third arm for a minute, because this length is not the same and is also varying. So you might have a position where one of the satellites is here and the other one is here, and this distance can vary, maybe sort of 10%, something 5%. But of course, given light travel time, this is quite a significant amount of time delay in the time it takes to go up one link versus the time it takes to go up the other link. Now, this would mean that if you want this noise cancellation to happen extremely well here, you need an extremely coherent laser source that's going to be putting out effectively monochromatic, unchanging intensity laser-like, and that is impossible. So if you were to try this directly and just measure the output in the same way that you would with LIGO, you'd end up with a noise spectrum that sits somewhere around 10 to the minus 13, which means you're not going to see gravitational waves. You need to cancel out this laser irregularity noise, effectively. Luckily, people have understood how to do this. There's a lot of research. You can Google, actually, time delay interferometry, and there's a number of papers out. There's even a review article that I'll show in a second, and I'll post the link to that. At the simplest form, you kind of do something like shine a laser up here, comes back, and then it goes up this arm and comes back and is measured by a photodiode here. At the same time, you shine a laser light this way that comes back, is reflected this way, and is detected by a second photodiode here. And the combination of these two can then be measured in a way that you can be shown that this will reduce the or remove the sort of uncertainty in or the irregularity in the laser intensity that's coming out. This becomes even more complex at a second order because also this length is flexing, the satellite is moving, and it's sort of spinning as it goes around as well. So you can make this more and more complicated if you want, and time delay interferometry can sort of add layers of complexity depending on how much physics of LISA you actually want to worry about and how much you care about this noise cancellation, right? If you want to go further and further down, you need to start worrying about more and more of the sort of effects of LISA itself because it's moving in its orbit. For the most part, with this, because I will point to what is a very nice review article. It's on Living Review and Relativity, so hopefully it updates. This was last updated in 2014, but it has seen a couple of updates in the past, which is maybe that's due for an update at some point. But I found this quite a nice sort of written introduction to think of some of the history and the motivations behind this time delay interferometry. So at least I would definitely read the first couple of pages of this before trying to do anything with LISA, just to understand where you're coming from with this, right? You want to get a sense of the fact that you are now dealing with a detector that it has to move and is on a constellation where it can't be in a perfect orbit, it doesn't work. So there is motion in the arms, they are flexing, they are moving, they aren't the same length. And these kind of concerns need to be taken into play when you're dealing with LISA data analysis. Now what this means from an analysis perspective is a nice picture that we used to do before, which is when we say, okay, our data that we measure at LIGO is just equal to some combination, some amplitude, times the plus polarization of the gravitational wave, plus some other amplitude times the cross polarization of the gravitational wave. And I'm not going to worry about any other theories that predict more than that. But this is nice because it means that in both of any ground-based detector, I'm just going to see a linear combination of these two polarizations. I don't have to worry about any sort of time delays that are in play here because the light travels through the detector so quickly that none of this matters for the most part. There'll be a slight correction to that in ET. And so if I have two detectors, I can probably measure H plus and H cross. If I have three, I'm going to get extra information, and that'll help me constrain alternative theories, et cetera, et cetera. With LISA, this picture's somewhat more complicated at this point, because now I'm going to be measuring some sort of quantity, some sort of time delay interferometry quantity, which is has a bunch of different letters. Let's start with X, which is one of the more basic time delay things. But this will look something like A H plus of T plus B H cross of T. But then it'll include a bunch of other terms that might be some sort of other amplitude times H plus of T at a time delay. And there might be a few of these at different time delays corresponding to the fact that you've gone up and down the arms a bunch of times. So these will start to appear with additional terms in here, which is written in the review, so you can see it written out properly, rather than me scoring something on the board, which is correctly derived and written out in the review article.
I think also the antenna pattern depends on time.
Yes, that is true. And that's actually, that's a good point as well. And as Alessandra reminds me, of course, you're also observing signals over a long period in which LISA's gone round and has moved. So these antenna patterns are, of course, changing with time if you're observing something that's not very abrupt. And in LISA, I think most, pretty much all of the observed sources we're thinking about are going to be observed over months or years of time, in which case you also have to worry about this thing moving, whereas in LIGO, for the most part, the gravitational wave just goes through within a matter of seconds or minutes, and then you can assume that LIGO doesn't move. So you have to worry about these sort of extra effects, let's say, of the LISA types of sources. But this shouldn't be too bad, right? We kind of have a sense of how LISA works. There are papers, models, knowledge of how the LISA satellite will evolve. We know how these things will be put together. They're written here in this paper if you want to read through all of it. So it should be a case that we can plug our existing codes into this new framework and continue with our analysis as we've done it in the past. That would be the goal. So what I kind of wanted to show in the rest of this then was where we would look to try to get involved and how we get onto kind of this type of thing. I may have lost the paper. Yes.
So the last time I did any LISA data analysis was like Michaela persuading me to do like NBC1. So this was like 2006 maybe. But when they did that, they released, they did the kind of quasi-calibration stuff where they turned the TDI streams into basically the two L-shaped detectors and said, go analyze this, but remember the beam pattern is changing. Is the plan to basically all do that upstream and have like...
Yeah, I mean, you'll never really get it into a point where you can fairly treat this as two L-shaped detectors.
Right.
It is possible. You kind of have three arms here with LISA, right? 1, 2, 3. It is possible to do this sort of time delay stuff, create three channels, and combine them in such a way that only two of them contain signal and one of them doesn't, unless you invoke some extra theory. And I'll sort of show that in a second now. But these will not be the same as just taking H plus and H cross. They will be sensitive to H plus plus H plus plus delta.
Yeah, so you get linear. You don't get the perfect linear combinations because you still get the time delay piece.
But you can bring this down to two certainly, and the code we'll sort of show the code to do that, or at least what's there to do that. And again, it is written up in here as well.
Right.
But yeah, you can reduce this to two data streams, but these data streams will not be quite the same as in LIGO or ground-based stuff. The question is how much it also matters, and that's another question that I don't know has been addressed particularly well. Can you just pretend it's a LIGO and lose a bit of information and just get the same stuff out? So to try to answer these type of questions, LISA put together some data challenges back in 2005, maybe first around then. These ran until about 2011 and were quite a good example for the Lisa Science case of the time in terms of trying to develop these strategies. Now, I think Lisa didn't go through such a good funding situation in the interim between 2011 and 2017. That's okay. There wasn't any state challenges during that period, but turns out a couple of good things happened. Lisa Pathfinder was awesome, and it turns out gravitational waves exist. So now we can actually go and try to reinvigorate these data challenges, and let's try and ask these questions again. So the new LISA data challenges, here's the website. This is where you should go if you are interested in some of this. So I'll put that one there. This is just an idea of sharing examples of LISA data with simplistic sources in them. That you can download and you can try and analyze, find the sources, figure out what it is, and submit the results. These are not done in a blind way, so you can download the source parameters if you want to and see what's in there. Hopefully we'll do some proper challenges, which will actually be a challenge in the future, but I think at this point they're mostly just to sort of get your hands on the problem type of thing. Let's go here to challenge one. So here you can see the various sources. So one of them is a merging massive black hole binary, and it's there in the data. And in this case, you can just look at the data and see it, and then you've got but figuring out the source parameters is the sort of more tricksy part of that. There's a gravitational wave signal from an extreme mass ratio in spiral, some superimposed galactic binaries, some more galactic white hole binaries, the sort of crossover sources, the stuff that LIGO will see 5 or 6 years in the future, and some stochastic gravitational wave background. I mean, of course, the idea would be you chuck all these in a bucket together and then see how well you can measure any of them, because they'll all confuse each other. But for now, at least, these are being separated out, and we can try and find them. To download them, you should be able to click here. Unfortunately, I can't figure out how to log in. I'm pretty sure I have a login, but my attempts to reset it and or set up a new account have failed. So I've been trying that for a few days now without success. So unfortunately, I can't download the data. I can actually get to the code that generated it in the first place. So I can generate the data myself. So I have been able to get around that. But at the 1 hour response time that was promised didn't work yet, unfortunately. Maybe someone's on vacation. Maybe it's just a bad week, I guess. Most of this is hidden behind login links, unfortunately, and there's no shared LISA login credential type thing, so you have to sign up to basically every website individually. Hopefully these kind of things can get sorted out as more people get involved in this. But what you'll end up in if you start looking into the code is basically there's a repository here which controls the LISA data challenge, and this is where people are encouraged to submit your analysis results or pipeline or methods if you're interested in this. Now, the nice thing about this is that, as well as some sort of welcome and documentation stuff, it has a bunch of Docker images that have all the code installed. There is a simulator of LISA hidden behind here, which has C code describing the sort of LIGO orbit, and it takes an input file and can simulate what LISA will do. So you can effectively give it a set of data, and it can construct for you what LISA will see in its time delay interferometer variable. Getting an install in this can be a bit of a pain, which is why it's nice to have the Docker image, because you don't have to worry about that. So I'll just walk through a couple of examples, and then I think that was all I wanted to say in my 30 minutes. So here's a Docker image that exists. It has all the codes installed in it already. So we can go to our terminal, having already set up the Docker image. So let me just share this one in the window. If people want to try this later, it'll probably take some time to get passwords and stuff set up. So I'm not going to try and do this live, because it would have been nice if I could get everyone to log in, but I think that's not going to happen. If we were here going through it, let's say something like I can start up the Docker image. So I'm now in an environment where I have all the LIGO code installed. This is just running on my laptop, so nothing special. Here's just then an example of some things that we can run to simulate a LISA type configuration. annoyingly, a whole bunch of this code is very, very finicky about where you run it. So some of it, you need to copy the code into your directory and run it there. Other code has to run from the installed location and point it to an explicit path to the input file. This is a case of trial and error because it won't meaningfully tell you when you haven't got the right one. So be a little careful with this or fix this because it's a bit annoying. But the basic idea is that you start with, there's a HDF file that contains the various parameters of what you want. So signals, noise configurations, details of the instrument, how complex you want to simplify the instrument's orbit or not. You kind of put all this together and then you run it through the LISA simulator, and this gives you some HDF output containing the LISA noise as a function of the TDI variables that you would then want to analyze. So in this case, other than copying things, I've configured the instrument. I want to get these TDI variables out. I've chosen a time step, duration. So just set up some basic options. Everything I'm taking here is the default values. You can run this with --- help to see all the different sort of choices you can make about the instrument. But for the sake of things, I'm just going to use the default variables in most cases. Having configured my instrument, I tell it that I want some noises, so I run configure noises. And then I run the simulator just to give me a set of LISA noise. And then I can generate a PSD with this file just to show you that I've actually done it. So let's run this through, and hopefully this will work. We can get a sense of how long this takes as well. So here's it running the simulator. This is roughly how long it's going to take to generate you a single waveform as well. So if you're interested in PE, this is how long the waveform's going to take.
What waveforms are
generating? In this case, it's just generating the noise. There will be a waveform in a minute, but it isn't the waveform generation that's the problem. It's the changing the time domain waveform into the TDI variables and doing all the instrument stuff in there that's the problem. I'll talk a little bit about optimizing things in a second. But if you want it properly, like if you don't want to do simplifications, that's how long it's going to take you to do a standard stuff. So at this point, we've generated there's some random stuff that appears for reasons I can't understand. But here you've got effectively a PSD as a text file. You can write a plotting code to plot that.
In slide on set, so when you run the script, you made a realization of LISA noise.
Yes.
Made a waveform and you stuck the waveform in.
So in this case, I've just made LISA noise. That's all I've done.
Right.
I've generated some LISA noise. And I've dumped it to a text file.
So when you said it takes a long time to do that, basically that's the process of taking...
That's the process of
converting it to X, A, and E.
Basically, yeah, that's the process of converting. We'll see a waveform in a minute, and it's about the same time. There is a couple of differences, but that's about the time it takes to sort of take what effectively will be H plus and H cross,
right,
and combine it with any noise sources and make.
And what's the LISA noise? You basically assume that you have a saturated Gaussian background in that HDF file that you're generating, or is it like taking pathfinder data, or is it?
Yeah, so this is simulating Gaussian noise according to the properties of the instrument defined in this noise file. So if we go to this one here, sort of sets the details of the noises that we're using. So let's hope that it has a --- help that's useful. Not. There you go.
So proposal PsyRD is different noise curves from.
Different models of the noise. You'd have to, I guess, we'd have to look a bit more deep to figure out what each of them mean. It is just going to set effectively Gaussian noise according to these processes.
Okay.
At this point, I'm not adding a stochastic background or anything into that. That would have to be chosen separately.
So this is just instrument noise.
This is instrument noise.
So basically, the
idea is that you would generally start with a configure instrument to set up LISA as it is, and then you'd add things into it. So if I'm adding my instrument noise here, if I wanted a stochastic background, I'd add a stochastic background as a step, and then I could add white dwarf binaries as a step, etc., etc. And then I'd run the noise generator.
So if I want to take some random, 159914 into it, and generate 159914, and run that through
I'll show a signal in a second now.
Right.
But yeah, effectively there would be a configure signal here, and you'd give it the parameters of 15.914.
Right.
And then it would add it in. Or you can sort of, it would be nice if, well, let me get on a little bit to the signal, because there's a few things that's not great about that, but yeah.
So here, I don't know whether this is the case, but I remember one of the reasons why this thing was very slow is that when you set up the parameters and whatever, the code integrates numerically the orbital leaflet, right? Is that still the case?
I believe that's still what it's doing, yeah. There is, I'm being told that this is likely to be replaced with a new version of LISA simulator, so... Right.
Because in terms of then computing likelihood, I mean, in principle, when you have something efficient, you would do this once, then the orbit is already...
It would be good if you could store some of this. I wasn't able to find an example where that's done. You can generate waveforms directly in the sort of time delay stuff, which involves a couple of assumptions, and you can do that in the frequency domain if you want. So there's some sort of work done to say, well, this is roughly what a waveform would look like, so let's not worry about this whole research step.
Right, that's something.
There's not a middle ground at the moment that I've found.
It would be nice to have that. That's something that people were working on in Birmingham.
So the biggest delay is just integrating the UDC.
Yeah, that's what I understood.
The location of the satellite. Yeah.
Right. So it's something that should... No.
Once you've got that trajectory,
you can overcome.
I mean, the basic point is, if you run this and get frustrated with it, start looking into this and go, well, where can this be made faster? Right? And that's really what I want to get is, if people run this and get frustrated, then I think we'll start to get solutions to these types of problems. But you kind of need people trying to do these types of things before I think these things will happen. Anyway, yeah, we can plot the PSD of this data just to see the sensitivity. The sensitivity gets a little weird because this isn't strictly strain, it's the time delay stuff. So I don't know that I can meaningfully... I don't know how to meaningfully interpret this as an astrophysical statement. Also, where's the plots over here? But yeah, you get a plot that sort of looks like a PSD. I didn't do the scalings, which I probably should have done, but you sort of see a bucket, and there's some weird stuff happening up here. Obviously, there is not infinite frequency at these points, but I think you're just saying the noise is cancelled here in these TDI variables. Presumably, the signal is as well. Here's what the noise will look like when you generate these. Here's the sort of frequency representation of the noise in these TDI variables alone, and that's just an example of getting some noise out. So let's put a signal in here instead as the sort of last example. So we'll come back. And to put a signal in here is basically the same sort of process. Firstly, I will, again, I'm just going to do a set of steps on this HDF file just to add information into it, and then I run the LISA simulator to evolve the orbit and generate a waveform. In this case, I've taken a reference parameter, which is a massive binary black hole system. It's just an example that's used here to show how it works. You can then choose sources from this file, which will take this, this file defines a range of parameters, and this takes the seed and chooses a specific source out of that. So if you change the seed, you get a slightly different realization. You can then compute H plus H cross from your signal data, which again, all of this is going into the HDF file as you go. Then I configure the instrument. I didn't configure any noise sources, so I turn the instrument noise off just so that you can see what the signal looks like. If you turn this on, you'll see it on top of noise. And then again, you just run the data as before. Here's a code then to extract the TDI variables into a text file so that we can plot it later. But again, it's basically the same idea, that there's just a set of commands that we're running on this to add things into the system. In this case, I'm just adding a single massive black hole. So again, we run it through. And this is then exactly, there's no instrument noise in this, so this is literally how long it will take simply to generate a signal. If I was doing inference, this is the sort of... If I did inference without assumptions, this is the setup I'd be using. So this is how long it would take. Like Alberto said, you definitely want to do some... This isn't going to work very well if it's going to take 30 seconds to generate a single waveform. But this is the state of the art if you don't want to make any assumptions about the waveform. I'll talk about assumptions now in a second. This is also... This code isn't tied into LAL Suite. LISA have re-implemented all of the waveform... Well, couple of the waveform models. I don't think that's the way to go. I think LISA should be using the same waveform module as I think that LAL simulation should be a GW simulation, and this be a global package of things that's useful to everyone. So it would be nice to get that more tied in. There are a couple of reasons for that, because you want waveforms that are easy to directly write in LISA's variables, which is why that's been done. But anyway, here we can plot some signals. Let me actually plot the signals. And that's the plot. Very good. And yeah, then here's what a signal looks like. In the TDI variables, and it just looks pretty much similar to normal signals. We notice that I've written this in the form of the three TDI variables in which one of them cancels out. So you can see that you really only need to worry about two of these combinations in analyses. The third combination can be written in a way that it cancels everything out, which is nice. If you zoom right in at the level of two orders of magnitude smaller than here, so there's 1 times 10 to the minus 24, is 1 times 10 to the minus 26, you can see that the cancellation isn't perfect. There is some residual noise there is some residual signal in this third combination because of Lisa's motion, and there's not been a perfect approximation. Pretty much, you can probably get away with losing a hundredth of the signal power if that's what you are worried about. That's a sort of overview of how to do this. There are cases, this is done with the PhenomD waveform. And that's done because people have written this waveform directly in the frequency domain with these time delay interferometry correction stuff applied to it, so you can generate this waveform then directly in this frame, which is nice. It would be nice to make this more generic so that we can take eccentric, whatever waveform of choice, and not have to worry about going through this process of sort of analytically writing it, applying these terms, and getting it out. But that's basically where we are with this kind of stuff. Here's how you can generate waveforms that are appropriate to LISA analysis. Here's how you can get the data.
Are you saying that as long as the waveform is in frequency domain can be adapted, the problem is that...
No, you need an analytic expression of the waveform, and then you need to apply the TDI variables on top of that. So you need to actually do some... It needs to be applicable... that the waveform needs to be appropriate such that these can be applied cleanly without losing any power in the process. So it is a case that you have to look at the waveform model, see how you can apply these two things together, and it isn't just a case, as far as I've understood, that there's a one solution fits all.
So you mean it's not just that you need, for example, in the frequency domain, the amplitude and the phase frequency domain of the waveform?
I haven't looked close enough into this to give a proper answer to that. But my take is it's more than that. I think you need assumptions about these evolutions for this to work.
So following up on that, it's not that there's something fundamentally different in the calculation where if Alessandro gave you amplitude and frequency or phase as a function of frequency, one could not do the calculation. The code does not support that.
Yeah, well, definitely the latter, but I think there might be a bit of the former in there as well. There are assumptions about the waveform that make this possible. I mean, these should hold because there's no real too much difference between these waveforms. But for things like higher order mode contributions, you might start to have problems doing this. So I'm not quite sure. Without having looked through this in detail, there might be subtleties in this that might not work generically. But I'm not
willing to.
I don't know that anyone's responsible as such. I think people have just worked.
The
MLDC code is Stas's code, but the waveform generation in the frequency domain is not part of this, right? It's Stas and Michaela are responsible for putting together the MLDCs, but they're not responsible for fast waveform implementation.
No, but I think Stas is responsible of the code because
Stas maintains this code. Yes.
Yes, of the code because he has used this to do. analysis. So they
could. I mean, if you have to ask anything to anybody, you would email Stas. That's as much as I can say.
I think.
Or Antoine.
He's nice, right?
So they are
two.
So just picking up that a little bit more. It's the expensive part is not generating like the intrinsic waveform that comes through the space. It's the antenna patterns. Because then it is
I mean I would avoid calling it antenna patterns. I'd say time delay interferometry because the response is complicated and involves these time delay terms in it. It is a little different. But yes, that's the part
that's taken. So I mean, also this question that is, you know, if you give it the signal that comes to us from space, that's fine.
If you can, the code does not directly support taking a H+ and H+ and running it through, but I understand how the format works, that in 5 minutes I can hack up how to put H+, H+ into this file, and it works. It would be as slow as this, but yes, you could take a generic, and then this could be anything, right? You could take generically H+ and H+ for, I don't know, a gravitational wave unicorn and put it in there, right?
So you think it's well simulation, choose FD waveform, blah, plus your hack, and then be done.
Choose TD waveform, yes, because of time domain. Yeah. The point is that to do this quickly, you want to be directly in the frequency domain, you're trying to generate waveforms in the frequency domain, and then you're analytically approximating what this time delay stuff will do to that waveform. And putting all that together gives you then a waveform model that you can actually run in a good amount of time. And that's where the disconnect comes then from, here's the sort of no assumption way of doing it, which takes 30 seconds to generate a waveform. Here's a particular assumption to phenom D, which is here in the code, and that'll generate waveforms much faster, but it makes assumptions and blah, 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 blah. How much does this matter? I don't know that. I think that's a question we should look at. Is there a middle ground where we can store some of these things, do this quicker? I think these are the types of questions that I think should be asked. But for me, they'd start by starting at this 30-second thing and going, right, this takes forever. How can we move down generically, because we do want to use any waveform, that someone's always going to come up with some new model with tides or exotic object or you name it, and you want to be able to put it in and do these types of tests
What you said before, I think, is quite important in order not to duplicate the work. There are all these waveforms that are available.
I am concerned that waveforms are being recorded in here.
Took a long time to write them, to review them, etc. We are continuing to doing that. It would be great if that could be used also in the results.
Yeah, it would be good that the generation of H+ and H+ is in the time or frequency domain is completely separate from LISA code, which is not the case at the moment if you want to do it fast. And I would like that to not be the case. I mean, LAL simulation is something that is developed by the community at this point. I mean, I think we need more times to. I think we need to stop coding in C for a start, because it's. I mean, we need to modernize this because it is stuck in the 1990s at this point. But I think if we can do that, having a library of waveforms that is generic and usable everywhere, I think is a goal that the waveform people should push
for.
There is a waveform package, yeah. It isn't clear that. There is a waveform working. I don't know the right word. Waveform working group, whatever. There are a group of people working to assess waveform accuracy in LISA. It isn't so clear that group has looked quite as much on this.
But that is led by, you know, Harold Pfeiffer and Leo Bach, who are not the people who are going to do.
Yeah, I think the focus of that group has been assessing accuracy. I think the focus of that group has been assessing the accuracy of these waveforms.
I'm talking about the core developers.
Yes, agreed.
Which working package is that? There are at least 10 working, or if not 20. We want to
maybe identify
which one is the one.
Yeah, I mean, it either goes in working package 2, which is data analysis stuff, which is me and Stas, or it goes in waveforms. And it isn't explicitly written. It is not explicitly written in working package 2, which is me, although it possibly should be, I think.
Yeah, because the people of the other subgroup are not the people, you know, experts.
Yeah.
It's more you and Stas.
But in reality. while we can say it's your responsibility, if Stas and I are sat there with literally no one working in this working package, it isn't going to happen. So this, as much as we can say this is your responsibility or your responsibility, if we don't have people working on it, it's not going to happen. It doesn't matter which working package, this is all rubbish. You just need people who are going to do it. It doesn't matter where in the bureaucracy they sit. We need people who are interested in this. And I think there's definitely interesting papers you can be writing about, Lisa. You aren't constrained by all the LIGO headaches. You can show cool science. Let's try and solve some of these problems along the way to writing these cool papers. We have good data analysis toolkits now that maybe with a month of someone's time can also be a really good Lisa package as well.
Yeah, so this is like, I'm thinking of the BLM's working package stuff, right? So there is a working package, one is the workflow modeling, and that's a different thing. And then there is data analysis tool and instrument response modeling. So as far as I understood, instrument response modeling is the Lisa.
Yeah, we farmed that off to people in France.
And, right, so that's separate. So that would be data analysis tool, because there you have data analysis framework, data analysis library, et cetera, et cetera, right? So that's exactly what Alessandro was referring to. And the thing is that this, as far as I understand, this working package is now taking care of putting this together. And really what, as Ian said, you know, what you need is just people to join this effort and make it usable, because, you know, Stas does a lot of this work. And it does a lot of the things his way, but you know, you can like it or not, but it's just one person anyway, right? So there's no way you can put this together by yourself. But you know, if people just poke him here and there and nobody joins the effort, it's, you know, it's pointless, because you know, there's no way these things are going to get developed.
I mean, Ian stated the problem, which is there needs to be a broad community supported
right.
package that's evolved from last week, because no one outside the LSE can contribute to last week because it's on private LIGO Git repository, so you come to a pull request and submit to last simulation if you're not in the LSC.
Yeah,
and you know, there's a lot of good code and 20 years worth of work in there, but it's a 20-year-old package. It's easy to state the problem, it's hard to get people to do it.
Yeah, getting some of this stuff out of git.ligo.org and into the public domain, I think is very much a goal we should push.
What's the funding situation in the US and Europe? I mean, it's great to say that we need to do all this work, but...
Well, I just wrote a proposal for the generic community waveform package, ask.
Is that true?
That's the proposal.
I should take a picture of this and send it to the page.
There's probably people in the back who'll give a better situation of the Europe. Maybe I can give a go, but maybe Alberto can say that better than I would. Or Alexander. Maybe.
So the I don't know. So the thing in Europe is that the ESA does not fund the science, right? So that's a big issue. So I'm not sure about the, and this is up to the national agencies. So as far as I know, CNRS or whatever it is in France are chipping some few million level.
Yeah, so CNRS and Max Planck
funding.
And the INFN have money that they can throw where
right.
they want, I think.
And they put some people to, you know, in Paris mostly to put this thing together, and that's Stas, Antoine, Sylvain, and a few other people, a couple of software people that are working on this. Other than that, there is no, you know, specific dedicated funding for this. We are like writing proposals to get committed together. We are writing a cost action. You know, we are trying to get what we can, but it's essentially up to the consortium to find something. There's not much that, you know, rains on us from above in Europe. So I don't know what's the situation in the US.
So I thought I heard rumors of there being a little bit of money now leaking out of NASA to help fund data analysis. I don't know what the state of that is.
NASA definitely advertised the position a year or two ago.
Yeah,
it's different between advertising a position
and,
like, you used to be able to go to ATP and ask for money to do this data analysis, and then that basically dried up, which is why Jill Cole was joining us.
But the ad funding astrophysics in this area, they started again.
Yeah, but there's still very little funding for. It's not huge. It started again, but it's not. biggest piece.
You also probably want at least one person in a research software engineer position.
Yeah.
To do this kind of stuff, and those are harder to get funding for.
I think
UK money definitely isn't going to cover that.
I think the position that Reed mentioned was more or less to lead the data analysis efforts in the US.
And where is it?
It's gone.
I don't know if it was
filled. You mean a serial shared position?
Yes. Okay, one more quick question. I think that you've identified a lack of person power, which is good to know. If tomorrow you had an army of willing developers, is there a flowchart like that you could tell you do this, you do that, or are we still at the step where we don't know what the architecture of the library is?
What I would probably say, unless there is someone actually in a software engineer position, is let's look at Alberto's slide. Alberto said, we're not going to get the time delay until an hour before the signal, right? Maybe I want to check this. So let's go through and try and do this. Let's hook our codes up. Let's start with the slow case and then find that our codes are not going to work. And then you're almost working towards a goal, right? And this can be driven by what science you're interested in. But if in solving these problems, you're also contributing back and making this better or more applicable in the long run, I think that's how this is going to evolve more organically at this stage. We are a long way from LISA launch at this point, so it's hard for people to focus on the software that we're going to need in 20, 30, whatever, but for people to focus on the papers that they're going to be writing and spending 10% of that effort contributing back, I think, to my way of thinking, that's, I think, how we'll get the bigger payoff, but I'm not sure that's an opinion that is broadly shared by everyone. But from my perspective, just having people going, I've asked these type of questions with LIGO already. I'm aware of the types of things I want to ask. Let's do a similar thing with LISA, or maybe let's have a look at this Emory thing. What's it all about? And then just go and do it, basically.
So a way to paraphrase that is, there's no structure in the documentation. You're saying this is like, wouldn't it be nice if we could call Lawson and just plug it in, gaping hole in the software to have that connection?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we have a few examples of people having done this, then we can sort of say, well, do we want to port some of this into whatever official tools exist? Mm-hmm. Let's be clear, right? This is not a software package. This is a collection of code that is thrown in a GitLab repository. Doesn't have a setup.py, it doesn't have a .toml file, you cannot install this. It is a set of random scripts. The LISA code is not that. The LISA code is a software package, and that's maybe slightly better, but we don't have a software package here. There is no software package for doing this type of LISA data analysis. That's where we need to get to. Right? This. If I have a software engineer, this is going to be the first place I start, right? It's going to delete most of this and reorganize it into a way that's more accessible. But by having people, if you've written an example of doing that, then we can put this in, right? We'll go, all right, we'll credit you in the process, et cetera, et cetera. You've written a paper, so I can cite it in the code, or as we write papers, you did that.
Right. I hear you, but if everyone goes off and does what they're interested in, then they're going to write slightly different and, importantly, incompatible software tools, and then you're going to try to get the community to unify.
Well, that then becomes, I think it's easier for me to solve a problem of choose five different examples and pick which one I like to put in here rather than no one's done it and I don't have any examples of this to try and implement in here, right? If I'm in a case of I have to pick between what you've done, brilliant, right? Or I don't care, right? You've all figured out how to do this on your own. Why do we need at least a unified code? We now have five unique examples of doing this. I mean, look at how LIGO data analysis is developed, right? We don't have one unified code base, not for any sort of analysis. There's at least four parameter estimation codes and four search codes.
At the same time, you've made the argument for a unified waveform package, right?
I've made my argument that LAL simulation be compatible more broadly. I think that.
Right, but so, in part of that argument, you said that LISA should not re-implement it, right? So if everyone's doing I'm just saying that they're...
Yeah, I think this then is a case of, with LAL simulation, in most cases, between the eight different search and or waveform codes have all called directly into LAL simulation in different ways, but they've all done that, because this is one place that's usable. Now, you do want to open up some Lisa-specific stuff, so I think we do need some thought. But I think if we're in a position a couple of years down the line where a few people have tried this, then maybe that's the point then to think about unifying this trouble. But, so I don't know that I know the right way forward, right? I'm making stuff up. But I don't want to try to constrain people at this point and then it not happen. I'd rather this be a freer approach and people try things out. And then we try and constrain this before Lisa launching becomes a thing. But I think...
That's perfectly fair.
This is the LSC circa 99, right? There's plenty of time. Actually, this is the grasp era of the LSC. There's plenty of time to rewrite everything properly before Lisa happens. I think at the moment, people need to write software to write papers to solve the problem. I think it's premature to say. Some of the stuff at the lower level needs software engineering, but it's probably premature to say the science needs software engineering. You made that mistake once in LEGO. Oh, actually, I have one more question. Instead of using a random noise generator, has anyone tried using the Pathfinder data as a random noise generator to make the noise for Lisa, so it maybe has non-Gaussianities and stuff in?
I don't believe that's... I don't even know where the Pathfinder data is, but I don't know that someone's tried that. It would be interesting as a...
You can ask Martin.
I mean, I think the idea is moving in that direction.
Right.
So this noise generator will eventually include all... the artifacts and stuff. I'm not sure if I can find it, but I don't think there is anything implemented yet.
Right. Any other questions? Okay, thanks.
Shelby, are we going to have a Lisa PE code by the end of next week?